It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, episode 5. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. We are two very tired men. Jesse, how you doing?
Yeah, it's been good, man. Seen a lot of hockey this week.
It's crazy because this entire summer, right, we've been sitting here thinking about hockey, thinking about what the combinations are going to be, thinking about what the team's going to be, what the jersey's going to look like, all this stuff. We can even go way back to last year when we didn't even know the name. And now here we are, and we've enjoyed on-ice actual hockey, actual practice, scrimmages from an NHL team all week.
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's finally here. We've been waiting for this moment for so long, and it's finally here, and these guys are out there. The NHLers are holding their own practices. The rookies are out there in camp now. It's all in full swing, and Gallant said it, and Rocky Thompson, the Chicago Wolves coach, has said it, but man, the NHL comes quick. You get into training camp. It's not like football and other sports where you get into training camp a month before the season. Mm-hmm. These guys just got on the ice a few days ago, and they're already getting ready to head to L.A.
Right.
For the rookie games, and then you come back, and it's like 3 days later, they're already have their preseason opener in Vancouver.
Yeah, which is crazy because the preseason opener, when you are listening to this, the preseason opener is 6 days away. That's insane. It's insane. And again, like we said, we've been waiting and anticipating this all, and we remember the prospects camp, which seemed like yesterday, and then you go back and think about it, it's actually 2 months ago. These guys have gone home, worked on things, have been in the gym, gotten better, and you could see that they've gotten better in those 2 months. It's crazy to see that.
Yeah. To me, it's just like the official training camp with the veterans, not the rookie guys, mm-hmm. starts the 14th.
Yeah.
And the 17th, they're in Vancouver for a preseason game.
Right.
That's 3 days.
Yeah, and obviously that first game is probably going to feature a lot more rookies than it is going to be established NHLers or Vegas Golden Knight players that are going to be there for the majority of the season, but still, there's only 3 days, and then they're playing games, and that's how, like, that's sport, though. You need to see what you have in game scenarios. Practice is great, and it means a lot, and everybody wants to have good practicing habits, but seeing what a guy can do with time and space limitations in a game setting is really what's going to weed out these guys.
Yeah, if it was up to me, I wouldn't send any of the veterans to Vancouver or Colorado for the first two preseason games. Oh, I just send up basically the rookie squads with a few guys just to fill it out,
right.
and then save those guys for the California trip. So the first four preseason games are all on the road. Don't send them to Vancouver or Colorado. Send them to the Cali trip, those two games, and then you get three here in Vegas and play them in those. But those guys don't need seven preseason games.
No.
They got a better chance of getting hurt than they do actually progressing.
And that's the funny thing, too, because a lot of people will bring up, well, you got to build chemistry. You got to build chemistry. It'll come. And it'll come a lot quicker because, and we've talked about this, hockey is very much a game that's understood on very different levels by different players. But if you've got a coach that can put those pieces in the right spot, if you pair up a sniper with a guy that likes to pass the puck, that chemistry is going to come. It is. And these guys aren't going to need seven games, like you said. They'll need three or four. And it won't be that much different from a regular camp, I think.
I think one of the biggest themes going into this season was, how is it going to work with 23 guys that have never played together?
Mm-hmm.
And going into this, my first story I wrote off the very first voluntary practice, like 10 guys showed up early, just held the practice on their own, no coaches or anything. And my whole story was, man, look at these guys. They know that they're going to need to get chemistry. They're all putting the work in. They're coming in. But now after like 5 days of talking to these guys, almost every player I talk to, I ask them the question about chemistry. And yeah, I'm starting to think it's overplayed. Most of them seem to think it's not that big a deal and they're going to have no problem with it.
I think that it just goes back to systems, right? Like, obviously, coaches have systems that they want to implement, and a lot of it has to do with, you need to be here at this time, you need to be here at this time, you need to react this way if the puck goes this direction, that direction. And these guys have been in those systems, by and large, their entire career. So it's not that different from coach to coach, team to team, organization, all that stuff. So they're just going to know where to be because they've played that position for 7, 8, 10 years in the majors. And they've also done it their entire life. You know what I mean? A left winger is going to know what to do in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone, in the defensive zone, because they've just done it so much. You know, obviously, systems and stuff like that, that's going to be for your rookies. That's going to be for the guys that have come in and that you just drafted. You need to teach them how to play in the NHL. But the NHL established guys, they're going to get it. They're going to know. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be that difficult to find those combinations, I don't think. Now, we do have a little bit of news on the television front. So we're going to start there before we get too deep into camp. Once we get into, and once we finish with television, we're going to go into camp. We're going to preview the Pacific Division. So we've got a lot to talk about here, but the television deal, still not on Cox, but there has been some movement, correct?
Correct. It's now on literally everything but Cox. If you have any type of cable, satellite, dish, whatever, other than Cox Communications, you now get Golden Knights games because AT&T Sportsnet announced a couple days ago that they are now on CenturyLink Prism TV. Which is a very small percentage of these companies. We've been over it a million times. They won't release the numbers, but if I had to guess, I'd say less than 10% of Vegas has CenturyLink, probably close to, like, I don't know, 7-8%.
Right.
It's not a very big number, but for those that have it, that's good for them. They don't have to switch.
Sure. And it also provides another option for those that, you know, still have Cox that may need to switch or want to switch. It does provide another option. So, We're about a week away from the first preseason game, which is going to be televised. If a deal isn't struck by then with Cox, what's going to happen? You know, like are people going to be upset about it? Are people going to be up in arms about it? Are fans going to turn off and give up on the season if a deal isn't in place to see that first ever game, preseason notwithstanding?
Like we said, there's not going to be that many of these guys that are – that preseason game's kind of a like, we're not going to see Marchessault and these guys in that game.
Good point. Yep.
It's like – it's more about October 6th in Dallas is the big one. But I will say this. I've been on the record as saying I don't think the Cox deal will happen before that October 6th opener. Mm-hmm. I still don't, but I'm a lot more optimistic following this deal. The fact that – AT&T Sportsnet came to an agreement with anyone, period, shows that they're not asking too crazy of an amount. Because before now, we had no idea what they're asking, and we still don't, but I just assumed it's way out of the realm of possibility that Cox, there's just no way they're going to pay that. Now, they may be doing that. They may be playing it harder with Cox than they are with CenturyLink just because they're such a big
sense.
And they have a lot more money, and it's like, this is where we're going to get our money out of. They may have given CenturyLink a much better deal.
Sure.
But we don't know. There's no way to know with the negotiations. But the fact that they are now on CenturyLink and they came to an agreement with a cable provider just makes me feel a little more optimistic that they can get something done.
Now, given the fact that this is an agreement that was reached between AT&T Sportsnet and CenturyLink, how much influence do you think the Vegas Golden Knights and or as an organization had on this deal, or any at all?
I'd say none.
Yeah.
Based off of the way they've acted. I mean, could Bill Foley have called them up and been like, you need to get it together and get this deal done?
Right.
But I don't know how much influence he has on it. I mean, he even said himself when they signed the deal, this is out of our hands now. It's up to them to negotiate. So I just think it was between the cable company and AT&T Sportsnet. But, I mean, is it possible? Yeah, I doubt it, though.
Right. Now, you said that you are more optimistic, but you still don't think it gets done before October 6th. Why?
Because that's how these things are.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not been told it's not going to get done. I have released every bit of information I've gotten out of any of them. And when this CenturyLink deal was announced, I immediately called the guys at Cox that I get information from.
Sure.
And he's on vacation, by the way, right now. But still replied.
Good for him.
Yeah. And basically said our statement is still the one that was given a month ago or however long ago that was.
Right.
No update. Same exact statement. So there's nothing to report new out of that.
Yeah. I'm more optimistic just because something happened, right? Because we're one step closer than we were. There's it's one more platform that it's available on. So that breeds optimism. That makes you excited. It makes you think that maybe there's some the gap isn't that wide. But it's a little bit troubling that there is no update on that front. That there is no, well, we've had negotiations and we're moving in the right direction. That would have been great. Even if it wasn't, you know, even if that gap hasn't shrunk by a lot, even if it's just a little bit, even if it's just negotiations are ongoing, we're doing what we can, we're getting closer to that agreement. None of that scares me. It really does. And again, we have said it multiple times. This will be a major issue if it is not available on Cox, because you're asking your fans to go out and work to see these games.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking your fans to go out and hope that the bar that they go to has DirecTV or Dish TV or CenturyLink and not Cox Cable. Because if they don't, you don't get to see those games. So you're asking an awful lot of your fans if this doesn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. It really is, knowing that we're this close, 6 days out from the first preseason game, from the first televised game in franchise history. I get that it's preseason. I get that a lot of the veterans aren't going to be in there. I understand all of that. But it's still a big, major moment in this franchise history that should be seen by anybody that wants to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just a little information for people that want to watch these games. So the games that are going to be televised, preseason games, they're mm-hmm. going to be televised on AT&T Sportsnet. The September 17th opener at Vancouver.
Yep.
Then the next couple aren't on TV, but then September 26th, Golden Knights versus the Kings. That's a home game. The Kings yep. come here the 26th of September. The two nights later, the 28th, the Avalanche come here. That one's also on. And then October 1st, Golden Knights host the Sharks. Those are all the last three preseason games, which are all home games, are all on AT&T Sportsnet. And the preseason opener against Vancouver, which is up there, where you can watch it. On DirecTV, it's channel 684.
Mm-hmm.
And then on CenturyLink, they just added the channel. It's 760 for standard, but who the hell watches standard definition? I mean, maybe if you're like
not for sports.
Maybe if you're like 95 years old and you just can't see anyway, so it doesn't matter. But assuming you can see, you're going to want to watch it on 1760. So
okay,
1760 good. Is their high def channel. Man, I can't even believe that they listed standard definition on the press release. Like, do people watch standard definition still?
I don't watch anything in standard definition.
If That's I ridiculous. Walk into someone's house and they have standard definition TV on there, I almost like. Man, that's like really like elitist of me, isn't
yeah,
it? I'm like,
no.
Oh man, I can't hang out with you. You have standard definition, like, and they'll have a high def TV. They just right. didn't know they had like no.
Yeah. Like that's my favorite part though, is when you're like, oh yeah, well you put that in high definition. They're like, I don't know how to do that. Just add a one. Just add a one in front of the number.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's I'm going to turn on NHL Network 316. Okay, that's great. Fantastic. Will you put on 1316, please? Because I can't do this. I can't yeah. watch this way. Come on.
It's.
You're better than this.
So, okay. So, CenturyLink, no need to put the standard definition channel in the press release. But, like I said, good news. Got it on that now. So, let's say, like I said, they won't give us the numbers, but mm-hmm. I would assume between CenturyLink and DirecTV, that's probably 40 to 45% of Vegas residents.
Yep.
Cox has probably got the other 55 to 60%.
So, it's still the minority in the Valley, but it is better than it was this time last week.
Yep.
So moving in the right direction. We'll take any progress that we can. Unfortunately, I don't know. I wish that when you reached out to Cox, there was something. Not what we said a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. That's where we're at still. Because it just that the optics of that are there's been no progress made. Mm-hmm. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. That's going to be hard. So hopefully it gets done. Like you said, I don't know that it gets done before that Dallas game on the 6th. I really don't. I don't know if it gets done before the end of October or even into November.
I hope it's done, man. That October 6th game in Dallas is such a big moment.
Yeah.
The first major professional game in the history of this city. Everyone's going to want to watch that. Even people that I don't think the ratings for Golden Knights games, assuming it's on everything, mm-hmm. are going to be spectacular.
Right.
They're going to be solid. But for that game, they will be spectacular. Everyone wants to watch it. And people are still going to be able to go out to watch parties and to casinos and to bars and watch it. So it's not like if you want to watch it, you're not going to be able to. But it would just be nice if everyone in Vegas could watch that opening night game and get hyped, because then it's only 4 days until the 10th when the Coyotes come here and they have that huge home opener.
Thank God that one's on national broadcasting, right? Like, thank God for that. Thank God we will. Anybody that wants to see it in the Valley that day is going to be able to see it, which is great. So, the home opener, I'm glad that it's on. It's going to be on NBC. I'm a little bummed that we have to wait three games to get our home opener, which, you know, that's fine. It is what it is. But hopefully it'll be a spectacle. Hopefully they'll get the W in the game. I wouldn't really count on it, though, because there's going to be a lot of extra festivities, all this other stuff going on. So,
I think they win that game.
Really? You think so?
That's like just the momentum that they're going to have.
Yeah, maybe.
It's going to carry them to a win. Yeah. I actually talked about this with Ken from Sinbin at training camp today.
Yeah.
And he's predicting 2-8 for the first 10 games.
Really?
Which is probably about what their win percentage is going to be for the whole season. I'm predicting 5-5 for those first 10 games. I think they're going to play way over their head.
Probably.
They're going to outplay their talent early in the season because they're just going to be so excited. There's going to be so much energy around this team, whereas other teams that have sucked forever, like even though the Golden Knights suck just as bad as them, they don't know that they suck yet. They're not aware that they suck.
Yeah, I get
Whereas, like, you're the Coyotes, like, now, are they going to say, oh, it's a new season, we can do this? But, like, you know you suck. Like, you suck. Well, everybody knows you suck.
Yeah, and we'll get into the Coyotes a little bit more in depth. But they're a team, like, they're so much in flux, that entire team, that I don't know that they're, like, if I'm looking at those two rosters right now, Vegas and Phoenix, I don't know that Phoenix is any better. I really don't. Like, I don't know that they're better than the Golden Knights.
Yeah. But yeah, so my whole point that I was trying to get to was I think they play over their heads early in the year.
Yeah.
And do better than they will for the rest of the it'll fall off after 8, 9, 10 games. But I think they come out of the gates hot.
So they go 5-5 and then they go 2-8 in the next 10 game block for the rest of the season.
Yeah, something like that.
That makes sense. I could see that. I don't know, maybe we should petition the NHL because they probably should have given Colorado at home for a guaranteed win.
Yeah, Colorado's just going to go 0-82 this year.
Could you imagine? I mean, it might happen. They're so bad.
No, they've got a couple guys. They got McKinnon. They got a couple guys that are going to score goals.
You know, because we never talked about it when we talked about the Avalanche last week. Did you put a projected point total on that team?
No. What, they have 48 this year?
Yeah.
They're gonna have 65. They're going to...
You think they're going to be... Yeah. Well, maybe.
That's still probably last. But
so bad. They're so bad. All right. So TV deal, that's the update. Obviously, if anything changes with Cox by the time we record next week, we will update you on that as well. It's going to be a continued story here on the Rink Rats podcast. Jesse is working tirelessly every single day on it. So stick tap to him because he's really the one that's getting all these updates, all this stuff that's coming down. He's badgering people left and right. Everyone's getting tired of him, but he's doing it for you, the listeners of this podcast and the readers at the Las Vegas Sun. So
it's all for you.
Yeah, that's what we do. It's what we provide. So let's go ahead and get into camp, okay? We'll start talking about those officially unofficial practices, which were started by Derek Englund, all right? And Derek Englund has been that name that's been so associated with this franchise in the same vein as Marc-Andre Fleury, really. And obviously Fleury for different reasons. He's a superstar, 3-time Stanley Cup champion. He's going to be the face of the franchise. We all understand that. But Derek Englund used to play for the Las Vegas Wranglers. He's an adoptive Las Vegas resident. And everybody's kind of come to him as the guy. Hey, where do we go? Where do we live? All this stuff, right? Now, at George McPhee's press conference, he made a comment about going with a leadership group and not necessarily a captain. And it's funny because you would call these practices for any other team like a captain's practice, right? Got one guy calls everybody, everyone goes out, does their thing. To me, Derek Englund is your captain. You just can't commit to playing him 82 games.
I don't want Derek England to be the captain. I like Derek England. I like him.
Yeah.
Good guy. He's hilarious. And he's leading this team.
Yes.
But you can't have one of the least talented guys on the roster be the captain. I feel like that's just, it's sent, not only that, but it sends the wrong message, I think. I don't know. I just don't, it just feels wrong.
I completely agree with you because he's doing all of the things that you would require a captain to do. He's the one facilitating everything. So to me, that says we've got a guy, but it's not going to be the guy, you know, like, and it's great because he's getting everybody out on the ice. A lot of guys came in and participated, which is good. Gave us a lot of things to talk about, but that segues right in to rookie camp, which started 3 days ago. Now, you've been out at everything, and it's great that you've been out at everything. So who's impressed you the most so far in camp?
We can talk about the veterans after, but as far as rookie camp goes, it's been the two guys that have the best chance of making this roster, mm-hmm. and that's the two older guys. Well, Spezza is one of the older guys, too. Yep. Or, sorry, not Spezza. Hika is one of the older guys, too.
Yep.
But it's really Keegan Kolesar and Alex Tuck.
Okay.
Those two, I mean, and it's no surprise that they're the two guys that jump off the page. And what Keegan Kolesar has been doing what he did in the development camp, and that's just jump off the page as a guy who's clearly above the level of these other guys. And the other two rookies, obviously our favorite rookie Brännström isn't out there. Mm-hmm. He's in Europe. He decided to stay in Europe and keep playing in his professional league that he's in, but Glass has looked good.
Yep.
Not amazing. He's looked solid.
Better than at development camp?
Yes.
Okay.
And Glass, man, he's a big kid.
Yeah.
For his age. He's still a little skinny, but he's a big kid. He can end up being one of those power forward type guys, mm-hmm. like Tuck and Kolesar both are.
Okay. Well, speaking of Alex Tuck, he decided to call in the show. Alex, how you doing, bud?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, we're great, man. Obviously, you got off the ice a little bit earlier today. So how's the camp been for you so far?
Oh, it's been good. I arrived on Sunday, so I was able to get a few skates and a few workouts in with some of the veterans and older guys in camp. And then rookie camp started a couple days ago. Off-ice testing went well. On-ice testing went well, too. And then we had a couple good practices up and down the ice. Got our legs going, a little bit of conditioning at the end, but it's been a good couple days.
Alex, we were talking about kind of how you've progressed, how these guys have progressed, and I talked about it with you yesterday at camp. How much better are these rookies than they were when you saw them at development camp?
A lot better. I mean, everyone's got 2 more months of training in the summertime, and I saw a lot of improvement from a lot of different guys, and I was really happy with it because, I mean, Mr. Foley and Mick Fee have said before that we're part of the Vegas Golden Knights organization, so we're all trying to make the organization as best as possible. So it's really good to see everyone come in really good shape and look a lot better on the ice as well.
So, Alex, what were some of the things that you personally worked on over the summer to get you ready and give you the best chance of making this team out of camp?
I just tried to get as many good skates as possible. I was in Boston, Buffalo, Rochester, traveling a little all over the East Coast, just trying to get in as many good skates with a couple different of my skills coaches that I've had in the past, and just working on some finer details and that will, I guess, hopefully translate into better gameplay this year.
Alex, when we talked to McPhee and his whole staff basically at development camp, they said this is a baseline for you guys, and they're going to give you things to implement into your game and to work on. What are the things that they told you? Look, you're close to making this team, obviously. You're one of those guys that could make the jump. What do you need to do better, and what do you need to do in order to have a role in the NHL squad?
We didn't talk about too many things specifically. I just got to come in and work really hard. I know... I've talked to a lot of people about Gerard Gallant, the type of team and type of players he wants to have on his team. And it's really hard-working, gritty type players that that bring their skill into a hard-working type of game. We want a fast pace. We want a forecheck hard. We want a backcheck hard. We want to play the game the right way. And I just want to try to fit that role as best as possible.
Let's say you have a great camp and a great preseason, and you do make the roster. What's your role on this team?
I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't really talked to any of the coaching staff about it or anything like that. Because right now, I'm just worried about versus camp. And I think that being an expansion team, you don't really know what your role is quite yet. And because everyone does have a clean slate, anyone can fill any spot right now looking at the roster. And it's a very diverse group of guys. So I think they did a really good job drafting. And I'm just really excited to see how it all plays out.
This is Alex Tuck with the Vegas Golden Knights on the Rink Rats podcast with Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Alex, at development camp, you were one of the guys that was helping to teach the rookies that were just drafted what they need to do to come up in this league. You're going to be going to camp with some guys that have had a lot of NHL experience. Who on that roster are you looking forward to learning from the most?
There's a lot of different guys. I mean, one guy that comes to mind is Jordan Peele, especially. I talked to him a little bit yesterday, and he's just coming off a hand and wrist injury. So watching him play in the past, I mean, he's a high-skilled, bigger guy. I've watched him play for years, and he's had a lot of success. He's got a Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he came really close to having one with the Nashville Predators. And I think that he's a really, really good guy talking to him, and he works hard. He's shown a lot of he's battled through a lot of adversity, especially during the playoffs after getting hurt against Anaheim. So that's a guy that right away I look up to and see that he works really hard and he wants to win. He wants to win another Stanley Cup.
Now, in looking at James Neal, is it more what he tells you, or is it more just coming, you know, watching what he does, coming to the rink every day? Is it going to be one of those lead by example type scenarios?
I think it might be a little bit of both. I don't know him too much personally. So there's going to be guys in the room that are more vocal, talk to the younger guys a little bit more and kind of become that vocal leader. And then there's going to be a lot of guys that lead by example. I think that they did a really good job of drafting a lot of leaders in the team. Some might be vocal, some might be lead by example type guys. But I think anyone can come in and be a leader. And I saw an interview with Mr. McPhee earlier this week just said they're not going to have a cap and run for that because you never know who's going to step up and be that leader, and there's going to be a lot of different guys that can be that leader and can be that captain so far.
Alex, one of your strong suits, obviously, you're a big guy, you're a power forward, is the physicality, and obviously that doesn't really shine through in these practices because you guys aren't beating each other up too much. How excited are you to get down to L.A. and play against the Kings rookies and kind of I feel like that's an environment that you'll thrive in.
Yeah, you know what? I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited to hit somebody. it's been a long summer, not making the playoffs with Iowa kind of was a downer, and not being able to play with Minnesota in the playoffs. But I've been looking forward to knocking some bodies around and getting in hard on the forecheck.
In those games, you guys are already kind of trying to get your lines together. I talked to you about it yesterday, and they got you on a line with Reed Duke and Wong, two guys that those two have experience together, and then you obviously have experience with Reed going back to Minnesota. How is that chemistry building?
It's building really well. I mean, they're very, very highly skilled, fast players, and I like playing with guys like that. I like an up-tempo kind of game. I like having chemistry with my line mates right away, and I think we've shown in the practice. I mean, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, down low game, and we've had chemistry, and we want to continue to build off that into rookie camp because if you have chemistry with your line mates, I mean, you look good no matter what.
I feel like that's one of the things that, and like I even am guilty of it myself, overblowing how hard it is for guys to get chemistry. Do you think this team with a bunch of guys that haven't played together, do you think it's that they're going to be able to gel in time for the season, or is it going to be something that's going to be tough early on?
I mean, they'll have their struggles, and everyone will have their struggles trying to get chemistry with guys, but there are guys that have played together in the past, that, and like I said before, the management and staff has done an unbelievable job drafting players that they think that will mesh together and have good chemistry and become a team right away. So, like I said before, I'm really excited to see how it all plays out.
So, Alex, obviously the goal is to make the roster. What do you need to do over the next 2 weeks in order for that to happen?
I think one of the words that Gerard Lance said was for the rookies to do is to dominate. And that's what I want to come in and during rookie camp. And that's what I'm going to try to do, during training camp as well. And in every shift, every game, and just bring full intensity, full effort, and show them that I'm ready.
Do you expect to make this roster?
I don't know about expect, but I'm going to do everything in my power to make it.
Now, let's just imagine for a minute that you do make it. Have you thought or given any thought at all to what that atmosphere would be like on the 10th at T-Mobile for the first game at home?
Yeah, it's going to be unbelievable. I mean, just being in development camp, going on that road trip in Montana and stuff, you can see the fan base just growing every day. I see it on social media. I see it in every way possible. And I already hear that they already sold out the arena and everything like that. So I think it's going to be an unbelievable experience if I am on the opening home game roster. And I'm just really excited and looking forward to it if I do end up making this game.
Alex, you're out there on the ice. We're over here trying to pick some of the guys that have jumped off the page, some of the standouts so far in camp. Is there anyone that you've been out there and maybe has surprised you, a guy that you didn't know, that you're not familiar with, that has really surprised you, whether it's with the veterans or with the rookie camp?
Veterans, I mean, I have no surprises there. I don't know too many of the veterans, but, I mean, there's a lot of guys with skill. I mean, early in the week I saw guys like Leipzig, Eakin, and Smith that have unbelievable amounts of skill, and I was skating with them early in the week. And then going into the rookie camp, there's guys like Reed Duke, and my mates Reed Duke and Tyler Wong are really good. And then guys like Suzuki and Glass and Kolasar really stood out to me as well. But, I mean, there's even some of the other guys that are free agents, non-draft picks, or later draft picks that have stood out in certain areas too, and that's really good to see going forward.
One of the mysteries of this team is Vadim Shipachov, and he's expected to be one of the best players on the team, but we know almost nothing about him. He came over from the KHL. Have you interacted with him at all, and what were your thoughts of skating with him out there?
I've tried to talk to him a little bit. I don't think his English is as good as most of the guys on the team coming from the KHL in Russia. I think he's still trying to work at it, and it'll be a struggle for him, but I think on the ice, I've noticed that he's got an unbelievable amount of poise and skill, and I hope he's definitely turned some heads during the season. I think he'll have a lot of success.
Now, in looking ahead maybe a little bit to the end of rookie camp, going into the main training camp, obviously, are there any players that you're hoping to line up with? Are there any players that you're hoping that you get to play with in those games?
Honestly, there's a lot of different guys that I would love to play with. I mean, this goes up and down the line up right now with all the guys that have roster spots. But, I mean, guys like Marchessault and Neal, who have been 30 goal scorers in the past, that'd be really nice to play with. And then you never know who you'll have chemistry with. And I just want to be with guys on my line that I have chemistry with and that bring out the best in me.
All right, Alex. Well, we really do appreciate the time. We know that you're busy. You've got a lot of things going on right now. But enjoy the next couple of weeks. It's shaping up to be a great one.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for having me.
Thanks, right, Alex.
Thank you. So, Alex Tuck, he's one of the guys that's expected to make this roster, one of those rookies that's expected to make this roster. And, you know, his size definitely helps him. His size is a major point of what makes him a great hockey player, a good hockey player. So do you see him fitting into this roster long-term over the course of an 82-game season?
I mean, long-term as far as, like, multiple seasons, yes. Yeah. I think he's definitely in the plans of the Golden Knights. This year, it's going to be – he's right there on the bubble. Yeah. If he's going to have to turn some heads and dominate is the word. And the thing is, when he gets out there in preseason games and he's out there with guys like James Neal and mm-hmm. Perron, he's not going to dominate.
Right.
But in these rookie games, he needs to – and he should dominate. And he has controlled the puck on the ice.
Right.
We talked about it in development camp. Whatever team Alex Tuck was on, the puck stays in that offensive zone until he comes off the ice, basically every time he's out there. And he should be dominating these guys because he's been in the league a little longer. He's been in a professional a little longer. He's had some AHL experience. He's a little further along than these other guys, but he's been very impressive. He and Keegan Kolasar have been the two most impressive guys as far as the rookies out there on the ice.
Which makes absolute sense. They should be. They should be, like you said, a little bit further along in that development process. Now, when we talk about a guy like Shea Theodore, right, We are very much in the same vein. We think that Shea Theodore, in order to develop and get better, needs to play NHL minutes. Is that the same scenario with Alex Tuck and Keegan Kolsar, where they can go down to the AHL and dominate, and that's great, but they're not going to face that adversity of playing against guys that are maybe better than them or faster than them or understand the game a little bit differently or better than them, and that they have to then raise their game to that competition? Is that kind of the same scenario there?
I think a little. I think Kolsar is a different situation than Tuck, because mm-hmm. Kolasar's played juniors, mm-hmm. and he just ran out of his eligibility for juniors, so he's going to be moving to AHL, which he hasn't really played before. Tuck has. I don't think it's the same, because we're talking to a guy like Shea Theodore. We're talking a guy that had 10 points in the playoffs this mm-hmm. year, whereas yep. a guy like Tuck and Kolasar, they haven't really done anything at the NHL level, so they're not quite. He's a little further along than they are. I won't be outraged if either Kolasar or Tuck are sent to the AHL, whereas Theodore, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah. No, I share that same sentiment with you. Tuck has been very impressive from what I've seen. Whether or not that's going to translate into a full-time gig on the third or fourth line, that's going to be the question. And then you have to factor in the fact that he's an offensively minded player. He's got good hands. He's got the size, but he is a power forward, and he would be expecting himself to score goals. So he's also got to be put into the right situation. If it's fourth line, 8 minutes a night, I don't know that it helps him developmentally.
Well, he said it himself. He likes playing with fast, skilled mm-hmm. guys, yep. and he fits well into that, because he can be the bruiser yeah. of the three forwards when he's like that. And I have my story on LasVegasSun.com today is the lines that they're building. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated by that. The first day of rookie camp, sure. we're talking to Rocky Thompson, who's the Chicago Wolves coach, the AHL affiliate, and he's running the rookie camp. Mm-hmm. Gerard Gallant has pretty much nothing to do with the rookie camp. Thompson's running the whole thing. He's also going to be on the bench coaching them down in LA for the rookie games. And we asked him about the lines. I think it was Steve Karp. He just mm-hmm. mentioned, "Hey, I saw Reed Duke and Alex Tuck playing together. Is that by design or just by accident?" And he's like, "No, we already have them in lines, and we're practicing in the lines on the first day."
Yeah.
So today, when I went out there, I had the story, and then I went out there today, and I went out looking to try to
right.
pick out the lines. Yeah. And so far, this is what we've got. The first line: Alex Tuck, Duke, and Wong, mm-hmm. who Duke and Wong have played together in the WHL for 3 years, or 2 years. One of the years they played like half and half, so they have experience together. And then you got Tuck and Duke, who were both drafted by the Minnesota Wild the same season. Mm-hmm. Tuck obviously stuck around, Duke didn't, but they did practice together. They didn't play any games together, but they practiced together quite a bit in training camp and stuff back then, so they've got experience together. And then the second line, you've got Hika, Cody Glass, and Barboulet.
Okay.
Who are all very quick. That's a quick line.
Fast line.
Yes. And then the third line, which I'm a huge fan of, is Keegan Kolasar, Suzuki, and Bajkov.
Okay. Now, I was able to talk to Nick Suzuki this past week, and one of the things that he mentioned multiple times is being on the right side of the puck, playing defense, full 200-foot game. And I'll admit it, the first time I saw Nick Suzuki play, that's the first thing that I noticed. He's willing to go into the corners, strip pucks, initiate body contact, and we're not talking about a big guy here. That, I like that. I like seeing that, because that has shut down center written all over him if he develops into that type of player. One of his favorites is Patrice Bergeron, and there's no one better in the league that does that. So is that kind of where Suzuki's going to fit into the plans here? Maybe a number two shutdown, number three shutdown center that can also score goals?
Yeah, he's not going to be a big goal scorer. I think he's going to be an assist guy.
Yeah.
He is so smart. And I feel like he's getting overlooked by a lot of people that are picking out guys that are standing out at camp, because mm-hmm. the thing is, when you do a one-on-one drill with just a guy forechecking and the offensive player trying to get past him,
yep.
or when you're doing shooting lines or whatever, he doesn't stand out, because that's not where he excels. His biggest weapon is his mind mm-hmm. and just the way he sees the ice. And every time I talk to him after practice, I'm like, "Can you wait to get these games?" He's like, "Man, I can't wait, because that's where I can show the coaches right. the hockey player I am. And not that the kid is a hell of a skater.
Sure.
It's not that he doesn't have physical attributes also, but he is a hockey player. He knows how to play hockey. He sees things other kids his age don't see.
Right.
And I cannot wait for preseason games to get him out there. And I really do think he's one of those guys that doesn't shine in a practice doing drills, but when you get him in a hockey situation in the middle of a game, that's where he's going to shine.
We were talking about the same thing with Eric Brandstrom during development camp. He was struggling with a lot of those drills, struggling with a lot of the practice stuff, but you get him into a game situation, this guy just knows what to do. Suzuki to me is the same way. He does. You don't notice him until he does something exceptional. And I think that also has to do with the fact that he does like to play on the defensive end of the puck, and he likes to put himself in the right position, so he's not having to do anything exceptional until he does something exceptional, if that makes sense.
In those scrimmages that they played in the development camps, mm-hmm. he was slow. He started slow the first couple days, but then I think it was the third day that they had the scrimmages. He scored like 3 goals in a row.
He was in on everything.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything.
He's a kid that it's going to really benefit him to get line mates mm-hmm. and get chemistry with them, and he's going to know where they are on the ice. When you're just throwing pickup games together, that doesn't really play into his strong suits, I don't think.
Right. Now, it'll be very interesting to see what he's able to do in Los Angeles. The same thing with Cody Glass. Cody Glass, we talked about it. Development camp, he didn't look great, but that was the beginning of the offseason. You know, he's had 2 months now to prepare. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Cody Glass is going to do in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he's the opposite of Suzuki, in my opinion. He's got a shot. Mm. That kid can score goals. I don't think he's going to be as much of a setup man like Suzuki is. And LeCision, the other center, man, how McPhee is not getting enough credit.
No.
For what he's done with this team. I was talking about it at training camp today. LeCision was supposed to be a first round pick mm-hmm. until he had the knee surgery. So McPhee got him in the second round. So
right.
He's got Glass at number 6, mm-hmm. Suzuki at 13.
Yep.
And LeCision, who was a projected first. So 3 first round centers yep. in one draft. Then you get Brandstrom, mm-hmm. who may be the best defenseman in the entire draft,
yep.
ahead of the 3 or 4 that were taken before him.
Right.
And you get Haig, who is also projected to be number 1. So he basically got 2 defensemen and 3 centers, all projected to be in the first round, in the first draft of his Golden Knights tenure.
If everything pans out with all 5 of those players, you've got your number 1 through your number 3 center locked up, and you've got 2 high, high quality defensemen that play a very different game, that gives you very different looks, that can be the pivots of the first top 2 pairing defensemen. So, yeah, I mean, everyone wants to talk about what he hasn't gotten or what he didn't get in value in return in trying to flip assets that, let's all be real, they were exposed in the expansion draft. So we're not talking about top-tier, high-flight prospects when we're talking about the guys that McPhee had to try to flip. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about trying to flip a Sidney Crosby. We're not talking about that. So instead of focusing on what you think he hasn't gotten value for, take a look at what he has done with the picks that he has acquired, the picks that he's gotten, and then just think about the upside and the potential with these kids. If they pan out, this team is going to be very, very good.
And yeah, just remember, and I know it's hard to be patient.
Yep.
And covering the team, I'm a lot more, I have a bigger picture look because I'm not a fan.
Yep.
Would I like to see the Golden Knights do well? Of course, because that benefits me, because people want to read the stories when they're doing well. Exactly. So, of course, I'd like to see them do well, but I am not a fan of the Golden Knights.
Right.
Teams that I am a fan of, the Denver Broncos in football. I'm not patient. I don't want to wait. We need to win today. Screw the draft picks. And I understand why. That's why fans want Jágr. And they see Mathot traded, and they freak out because Mathot could have been the best defenseman on this team. But if you just take a step back and look at McPhee's not building this team to win this year. He's building this team to win in 3 or 4 years, and yep. he's doing a damn good job of it.
No, I agree. And it's funny that you bring up Mathot. Well, Mathot could be the best defenseman on this on this roster if he was still playing with Erik Karlsson. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just calling it for what it is. When you're playing with the best defenseman in the world, you could be a pylon and you'll still look fantastic. So let's just be real there. So obviously we're going to have a lot more to talk about when it comes to camp. It's going to be ongoing over the next couple of weeks. We will have updates on games. We'll have updates on scores. We'll have updates on who's impressed us over the course of this past week on our next episode. And we'll just try to dive as deep as possible as we can into the Golden Knights and maybe give some predictions on who we think's going to make the roster, those bubble spots that are there that we really don't know anything about.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but yeah. Man. People don't understand what McPhee's doing, you guys.
No, they don't.
Guy, I wanted to look it up, so I just had to. Like I said, he just got 5 first round pick talents in the first draft ever.
Yep.
Then you look at the 2019 draft, and they've got their first round pick. They have 3 second round picks, 3 third round picks, and 2 fifth round picks. This team is going to have the pool of talent at the prospect level in 3 years that this team is going to have is unbelievable. I don't think a team in the history of the NHL will have. Now, they're not all going to pan out. That's just the way these things work. But I don't think in the history of hockey in 3 years the Golden Knights will have more prospect talent than any team in the history of the National Hockey League.
I agree wholeheartedly. And again, with George McPhee, if you look at his track record, he rarely misses when it comes to drafting players.
He's been good. I mean, he misses a lot, but there's never been a GM in the history of the world that doesn't miss a lot. But he has a good track record of drafting players, and you just have to trust him. And so far, the guys that he's taken, it's practice, and we're going to find out here in training camp and in these rookie games and in preseason what they actually look like in games. But there's no reason to believe that these guys aren't, especially Brännström, that these guys aren't going to be solid NHL players.
Right. Absolutely agree. So,
and it's a numbers. Sorry.
No, yeah.
It's a numbers game. Like you said, they're going to miss.
Yep.
Every other team only has 1 first round pick.
Right.
And 1 second round pick. And the Golden Knights have like 15 of them in this like 3-year span. So it's a numbers game. So even someone like McPhee that's really good, he's going to miss. But when you have 15 of them, you're going to have hits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're going to be the cornerstones of your franchise going forward.
And that's how you have to do it. You can't go out and trade for a superstar. You have to build the talent. You've got to draft them and grow them. That's how you win Stanley Cups in this league. So they're on the right track. It's easy for us to be patient. It's not so easy for the fans to be patient, but that's why you come to us. That's why you listen to our podcast. So we can tell you to be patient because we can see it. It's only going to be a matter of time before you can see it too. So there's that. Now, one of the things that's going to benefit the Golden Knights, at least in the first couple of years when they're trying to gel and trying to get this whole expansion team off the ground, is that they're playing in arguably the worst division in hockey, and that's the Pacific Division. It is not a very good division, which is ironic because about 4 years ago, it was the best division in hockey. The Kings were phenomenal. The Ducks were phenomenal. San Jose was very, very good. And that, you know, Arizona was good. They were relevant there for a time. So it's a very interesting division to be in, but it's probably the best possible division for them to be in because there are going to be a lot of winnable games intra-division. When you're looking at Arizona, when you're looking at Vancouver, two teams that are very much in rebuild mode, and even looking at Los Angeles, who is not a very good team. And we can break that down a little bit here. So we're going to cover the Pacific Division right now. We're going to try not to go too long on all this, mainly because we like to keep these things to about an hour. So the first team that I want to talk about in the Pacific Division is obviously going to be the Edmonton Oilers. Okay, Connor McDavid is going to be the best player in the world within the next 2 years. I get that a lot of people want to say he's the best player in the world right now, but I'm sorry, the kid can't take faceoffs to save his life. And if you want to be considered the best player, you have to do everything well at your position. That he's a center that can't take faceoffs, he's got to improve that. More than the points, more than the goals, more than the assists, you've got to start being able to play in your own zone, kid. I'm sorry. But notwithstanding, he is a fantastic, dynamic offensive player, but you saw him struggle in the playoffs. Luckily for him, Leon Draisaitl picked up the slack, was a beast, Both of those guys got brand new, gigantic contracts to go along with the bloated contract of Milan Lucic and pretty much everybody on that team. They're going to be in cap trouble very, very soon. So when I'm looking at Edmonton, I say to myself, their window is now and maybe 2 years. Because those contracts, especially that Lucic contract, is going to hit them like a ton of bricks when Lucic can't score more than 15 goals in a season.
I disagree.
Really?
I think the Oilers are going to be a Stanley Cup contender for the next 8 to 9 years. Because you don't want two players to eat up a lot of your cap, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's happened in Chicago. But when one of those players is as good as Connor McDavid is, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. He's just too good. It doesn't matter. He's all those. So, like, say you paid him all this money, so there's like three other players that you can't get. He's better than all three of them combined. It doesn't matter. He makes up for whatever you're losing because you can't pay him because you're paying him so much. He's better than that. He's just so good. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think you pay Connor McDavid whatever he wants, but I'm talking about that Lucic contract. That contract is bad. And you're talking about $7 million for a guy that's not going... He is not going to be a 20-goal scorer in this league for... Maybe he does it this year, maybe he does it next year, but he's not going to do it for the remainder of the contract. And you can't pay a guy $7 million to score 15 goals.
It was a bad deal. And like you said, there's guys that are going to want contracts coming up, and some of them are... I really like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Shutdown center. Very, very responsible responsible player.
And then you got Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, guys like that. They've got a lot. The Edmonton Oilers, now this is like shooting for the stars type of thing, but the Edmonton Oilers right now are what McPhee is trying to make the Golden Knights into in 5 years.
Right.
Because they've got all these prospects that they've built up, and they're just all coming into their own at the exact same time. This team is so good. And we talked about Shea Theodore. Should he be in the NHL? Can he develop? We talked about that earlier. The best thing that could ever happen to Connor McDavid was getting the absolute crap beaten out of him for 7 games against the Ducks.
It's true. It's a good point.
He was in a boxing match for 7 games. The Ducks literally sent guys out there with your entire purpose of being on the ice is to just beat up Connor McDavid. And it really messed his game up.
It did.
But you can't get that anywhere else. You're not going to get that other than being in the conference semifinals against the Anaheim Ducks with some of the best defensemen in the league, and they're sent out there with the sole purpose of just breaking your soul. Just crush every ounce of want to play hockey he's got in him.
Yeah.
And he's going to come back better for that, in my opinion.
Right, and... You know, I thought Edmonton was the better team in that series. They, you know, that comeback by Anaheim was phenomenal, but that's more on Todd McClellan than anybody. You've got, as a coach, you've got to figure out a way to settle your team down. I get that they're young, but still, you got to figure out a way to win that game. The only thing that scares me about the McDavid contract and the Draisaitl contract is where they're going to play. I'm sorry. When you're committing that much money to two players, they can't play on the same line. They can't. You cannot put a deep lineup on the ice if you've got $22 million in one line. And not even just one line, two-thirds of a line. And then if you add Milan Lucic to that line, you're talking about $28, $29 million in one line.
So you want it to be more like a Crosby-Malkin situation?
It has to be. It has to be. And that's what I'm talking about with McDavid. I don't care if he worked on his shot. I don't care if he worked on his speed. I don't care if he worked on his passing. What I care about is, can he win 60% of his faceoffs? Because that's the only way he's going to be out there without Draisaitl. Because Draisaitl can. You know what I mean? So they've got to get McDavid into a position. And it happened with Crosby. Crosby couldn't win a faceoff to save his life when he broke into the league.
McDavid's 20 years old. There are so many things that he's going to get so much better at. How scary is that?
It is. And I have no doubt that he's putting in the work to do that. I just hope that he does it before that contract kicks in. You know what I mean? Because, again, the optics in Edmonton are going to be like, oh, my gosh, we've got $22 million in two-thirds of one line. That's a lot. And then you look at the lack of depth there, it just doesn't work long-term. But they're going to be good. They're going to make the playoffs for the next 8 to 10 years.
They're
going to
run away with this division,
I think. Yeah, no, they're absolutely tops in the division, for sure. And Cam Talbot is not a question mark in goal. He does need to play less, though. He was way too tired heading into the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I think he played the most minutes of any player in the NHL last year.
Yeah, which
and
is
faced a ton of shots.
Which is wild. So, yeah. Okay, Edmonton, tops in division. Team that's most likely going to finish second in the division is Anaheim. There's just too much veteran leadership there to not finish that high. The only thing that I don't really know is John Gibson. John Gibson is that guy where he can be really, really good and just phenomenal. And then you look at him and he makes these plays and he doesn't make saves. And you're just sitting there scratching your head. What are you doing?
Yeah. He's not consistent.
No.
He can be really good. He can be really bad. They brought in 37-year-old Ryan Miller from
that's
Vancouver.
Gonna help. Yep, that's going to help.
So now he's got an old man behind him. I don't know. Yeah. The Ducks didn't do much.
No.
They didn't. I mean, it's not like they need a complete overhaul. They were a couple games away from the Stanley Cup Finals. But everyone got a little older.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. I wouldn't call them old. Like, the Kings are old. That's an old team. The Ducks aren't quite on that level yet.
Yep.
But they're getting there. I think this is like you talked about the Oilers' window. The Ducks' window is very, very small.
You know, and that's it's funny that you bring that up because I don't know that they even have a window at this point. Now, I know that they got very, very close, but man, I'm telling you, Ryan Kessler looked old and slow, and he just wasn't effective. He was effective against McDavid. He was not effective against Ryan Johansson. Ryan Johansson just skated circles around him, and that was so evident. And Ryan Getzlaf has always been a very, very good and consistent player in the regular season. But when the chips are on the line, he just folds. He just does in the playoffs. And Corey Perry has not been an elite goal scorer for 3 years now. There's no reason to believe he's going to change that around. So they're going to be a very old team, like you said, and they're going to make the playoffs because this division's not very good. And they just do. That's just what the Anaheim Ducks do. They make it to the playoffs. But I don't know that you can look at that team as it is right now and say that they're contenders.
Yeah, no. I mean, if you're making me pick three or four teams in the West that can come out, I think they're one of them.
Just
because, like I said, they're still good. They're not a bad team. They were a couple games away from the Stanley Cup Finals. They didn't lose much from that. I think they're kind of now. Edmonton might be a lot better this year, and if they run into Edmonton in the playoffs this year, that's not going seven, I don't think.
No, it's not. And I believe Todd McClellan will have this team in a better state to not make those mistakes. They're not going to make the same mistakes that they made last year against the Anaheim Ducks. So, yeah, I don't know that I see anybody coming out of the Pacific but Edmonton at this point.
Yeah, it's a weak division.
It is. Now, one team that I do like is Calgary. All right. Now, again, with Calgary, it's a lot of young, good talent in the same way that it's Edmonton. It's just not, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah.
It's Gaudreau. It's Monahan. It's Sam Bennett. It's good on the blue line with Giordano and Dougie Hamilton. So you've got good players there. And then you upgrade your goaltending. You get Mike Smith. Now, a lot of people aren't so high on Mike Smith, but here's what I'm going to say to you. He's not Brian Elliott. And the only reason that the Calgary Flames lost as badly as they did in the playoffs last year against the Ducks is because Brian Elliott forgot how to save a puck.
Yeah, I don't know if Mike Smith's that much better than Elliott.
I think he's better than Elliott. I think based on what we saw last year, if you put those two together or if you put them side by side, Mike Smith is clearly the better goalie than Brian Elliott. Does Brian Elliott bounce back and have a great year this year? It's possible. But I don't think Mike Smith is going to have the type of year that Brian Elliott did.
Yeah, man. I'm with you on Calgary as far as being young, and I just think all anyone talked about all offseason was they need to get a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And there were goalies on the move. Ronta moved.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop moved. I'm blanking on his name from Chicago.
Darling
moved. Yeah. Scott Darling moved. If you put Scott Darling on the Calgary Flames,
sure,
they're competing with Edmonton for that division.
It's 1-2.
Yeah, but I just don't like Mike Smith.
I think he'll be better. I think he'll be better than what they had last year.
Man, I just don't feel good about that. Did you see the shot he took at the Coyotes when he got traded?
No, what'd he say?
So his first interview in Calgary, they're talking to him, and they're like, oh, what? They're asking about these guys on Calgary. Oh, are you excited to play with these young up-and-coming guys? And he mm-hmm. goes, yeah, it's going to be nice to pass the puck to guys that can actually score. Shots fired. So I can't wait for the Coyotes to play them. They're probably going to.
Oh, man. I want to see Max Domi just light him up. That'd be great. Okay, so close the door on Calgary. Let's talk about San Jose. All right. They're a team to me that's a lot like Los Angeles. Their best years are behind them, mm-hmm. and they're coming down to earth. They lose Patrick Marleau, which, to be honest with you, I don't think that's going to make much of a difference. Logan Couture, Joe Pavelski, those are the guys that are now propelling this team. Joe Thornton, is he going to be close to a 60 to 70 point guy? I don't think so. I think he's coming down. Mm-hmm. He is, and he suffered through some injuries. The best thing right now that the San Jose Sharks have going for them is between the pipes with Martin Jones.
Yeah, no, the Sharks, and I think they have a little bit of a bounce back year. I think they're a little better than they were last year because mm-hmm. of the whole Stanley Cup loser hangover thing.
Right, yeah.
And that's what they went through last year. This year they got knocked out early, which you never want to do, but it gives an older team a little more rest in the offseason. I think the Sharks are solid again. I think they're going to compete for like an 8 seed or a 7 seed, maybe a little higher. But like you said, their best days of the San Jose Sharks are behind them. That team that went to the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, mm-hmm. they'll never be that team again.
No, definitely not. So it's unfortunate, but that's just kind of the way that it is. Now let's talk about the Los Angeles Kings. The Los Angeles Kings are one line in Tanner Pearson, Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli. They have one other player in Anje Kopitar, who's a, you know, somewhat offensive, but then again, he only put up 12 goals last year for $10.5 million, so that works out for you. And then you've got Drew Doughty, a couple of defensemen, and Alec Martinez and Jake Muzzin, and Jonathan Quick if he can stay healthy. That's the team. Like, that's it. So you've got one legitimate line, one two-way center, three defensemen, and a goalie. This team is not very good.
And they're really, really old.
And they're overpaid.
Old and overpaid and just old.
it's great because you look at this team and you look at what they were able to do in 2012, 2014, even going to the Western Conference Finals in 2013. So really, it was a three-year window where they were very good. And since then, they've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. Had a lot of player personnel move on. Mike Richards, you lose him. You lose Jarrett Stoll. A lot of scandals. Slava Voynov, all that good stuff. And it turns this contender, this juggernaut of a team, into whatever it is they're going to put on the ice this year. Dean Lombardi, for all the good that he did in building those winners, he completely undid all of his work with bloated contracts to guys like Dustin Brown and Marian Gaborik, and they can't get out from under it right now. Gaborik, hurt again, isn't going to start the season, isn't going to make camp, so you know what you're getting with him, 6 goals maybe. I just, man, success is so difficult to navigate in this mm-hmm. in this NHL with the salary cap.
And the Kings, their only player under the age of 67, Gabriel Vilardi, who I thought was a great pick in the draft, he dropped.
Yeah.
Way too far for me. And they got him, and I thought that was a great pick, but he's already hurt. He's not even going to be playing against the Golden Knights in the rookie game. So they just announced it a couple days ago. He's hurt. He's out. He might not be ready for the season. It's a team that's got – the thing is, the Kings have name brand players that people recognize. And, like, a lot of people, when the expansion draft was happening, they're like, oh, my gosh, we could get Marian Gaborik. We could get Dustin Brown. Like, you don't want them. The Kings don't want them. The team – I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league just because of guys like Quick, Drew Doughty. What's his name? They brought in Mike
– Camilleri.
Camilleri, who he's going to add goals to a team that really needs goals.
No, he will. And it's funny that you bring up Camilleri because Camilleri, Kopitar, and Brown used to play on a line about 10 years ago where they actually scored goals. It was crazy. But that's when the Kings were awful. So it's funny how it comes full circle. But
The fact that they were all playing together 10 years ago just tells you how old this team
is. That's it right there, right? It's the truth. It's the absolute truth. But that's the player they could get. That's the impact guy they could get was Mike Camilleri. Yeah. And the other thing that scares me is goaltending depth, okay? So you've got Jonathan Quick, and then you've got Darcy Kemper.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jeff Zatkoff. And I don't know if you saw any of Jeff Zatkoff's starts last year when Quick went down with injury. It was atrocious. We're not talking about an AHL goalie. We're talking about an ECHL goalie trying to play in the big league. It doesn't work. The Kings, to me, at best, a wild card team, more than likely are not going to make the playoffs.
I don't think they make the playoffs.
Yep. So that leaves us with two teams, the Vancouver Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes. And everything that I'm going to say about one, I'm going to say about the other, basically. So some good young talent. And you know, at least the Coyotes got rid of Shane Doan. It was 2 years too late, but at least they have moved on and said, this is a rebuild. We are going to do it the right way. They got rid of Mike Smith, another one of those guys. They bring in Antti Raanta, which is a good, good move. He's a better goalie than Mike Smith. I totally agree with you there. Mm-hmm. And they've got some good young pieces in much the same way that the Vancouver Canucks do. But the thing that I think makes Vancouver worse than Arizona is that they still have the Sedin twins.
Yep. I was going to say, there's only one thing I want to talk about with both of these teams, and that's, to me, the only storyline that's even worth a crap that anyone should care about between these two teams is... Yep. First off, will Vancouver trade the Sedin twins?
No way.
Before the deadline.
There's no way they can.
To some team that just needs... If you're a team out there that is like right on the brink, you might take those guys. I don't know. Maybe. They still have something left in them. And then the second thing... So would they be like a package deal?
Have to be.
So you trade them both. And then the second thing is, would the Sedin twins just retire if they got traded from Vancouver? Would they even be willing to go to another team?
See, that's the thing. I think they would be willing to go to another team, but it has to be together. It'll never be apart. You'll never see Henrik go to Pittsburgh and Daniel go to Washington or whatever it may be. They will never split up. And that is so weird to me.
Yeah, it's strange. But yeah, to me, that's all I wanted to say was it's going to be fascinating. I think they should trade them. Mm-hmm. I think they should try to get something out of them to build for the future. Like you said, they got some good young players. They could use those two. And then I think they're not the most attractive trading piece, but there might be a team out there heading to the trade deadline that thinks that those two guys could put them over the hump.
Right. Hey, but it's going to have to be a scenario where Vancouver eats some of that salary, because you're not, if you're a team trying to get the Sedins, you're not talking about one salary, you're talking about two.
Yep.
And two pretty big salaries as well. So that's going to be the tough part. And then, obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, we've been talking about this team for every week. This is a podcast that deals a lot with the Vegas Golden Knights. And to be completely honest with you, we don't really know what we're going to get. We can think about it. We can have ideas. We can say that Vadim Shipachyov is going to be a 20-goal scorer, 30-assist guy, 50 to 60 points, somewhere in there. We don't know. We have no idea. We don't know what he's going to be. We don't know where Jonathan Marchessault is going to fit into all this. We don't know how long James Neal is going to be a part of this team, if he's going to be moved at the deadline, or if he has a blazing start to the season, good couple of months, you trade him as when his value is at the highest. So maybe he's only here for 3 or 4 months. We don't know. We just don't know. So for that and that alone, I want to say that the Golden Knights are going to finish last in the division. It wouldn't surprise me if they do finish ahead of, say, Arizona or Vancouver, especially if the Sedins are either moved or are really, really bad. But at least we know that they're not going to finish 31st.
Yeah.
Because Colorado is still in the league.
I think the Golden Knights can beat out one team in this division. It's a bad division, and they're going to get some wins because they're going to get to play these teams over and over and over and over again. And they're going to get, and like we said, they're going to face a lot of backup goalies later in the season. I think the Golden Knights will, by bold prediction,
there it is,
they won't finish last.
Yeah. I don't think and here's, again, we've talked about it, but you know, the Golden Knights are going to have a shot pretty much against five of the eight teams that are in this division, or five of the seven teams that they'll be playing against. Yeah. They have a shot every night against the Kings. They have a shot every night against Arizona, a shot every night against Vancouver. And then they've got, you know, they've got a shot against San Jose every night, I think. That, again, especially if they're playing a backup.
Yeah, I think San Jose is a little bit of a stretch. I think San Jose should clearly, like, they should beat the Golden Knights.
You think so?
80% of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
And Calgary and Edmonton are going to just pound on them. But, and the Ducks are going to pound on them. But, yeah, I mean, definitely for sure Kings, Vancouver, and Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm overshooting it. Maybe I'm just being optimistic.
We'll see. We'll see.
Could be that. All right, so this is going to end the episode. We talked about the TV deal now on CenturyLink. We talked about it not being on Cox still. Hopefully that gets resolved before the beginning of the year. We talked about development camp. We had Alex Tuck from the Vegas Golden Knights join us, called the show. Big thank you to Sage Sammons for setting that up. And then we got into the Pacific Division, where we think that Edmonton will run away and everyone else is just that much further behind. Ryan also hates the Los Angeles Kings, so there's all of that. Next week, we're going to update you on camp, rookie camp, end of rookie camp, start of big camp. We've got a lot to get through over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to be here with you right until puck drop for the beginning of the season. Going to get more guests, so please subscribe. If you're on iTunes, look up Rink Rats, hit the subscribe button. Every episode, Monday, 10 a.m., LasVegasSportsNetwork.com. Thanks.